জয় জয় শ্রী চৈতন্য জয় নিত্যানন্দ। জয় দ্বৈত চন্দ্র জয় গৌর ভক্তবৃন্দ। জয় জয় শ্রী চৈতন্য জয় নিত্যানন্দ। জয় দ্বৈত চন্দ্র জয় গৌর ভক্তবৃন্দ। জয় জয় শ্রী চৈতন্য জয় নিত্যানন্দ। জয় দ্বৈত চন্দ্র জয় গৌর ভক্তবৃন্দ। শ্রী চৈতন্য চরিতামৃত রিডিং ফ্রম আদি লীলা চ্যাপ্টার টু হু নোজ হুইচ ভার্স উই রেড লাস্ট। Okay, I start from 25 onwards. Bhakti joge bhakto paaye jaharo darshan, surjo jeno sabigraho dekhe devagan. Through their service, devotees see that personality of Godhead, just as the denizens of heaven see the personality of the sun. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has His eternal form, which cannot be seen by material eyes or mental speculation. Only by transcendental devotional service can one understand the transcendental form of the Lord. The comparison is made here to the qualification for viewing the personal features of the Sun God. The Sun God is a person who, although not visible to our eyes, is seen from the higher planets by the demigods, whose eyes are suitable for seeing through the glaring sunshine that surrounds him. Every planet has its own atmosphere according to the influence of the arrangement of material nature. It is therefore necessary to have a particular type of bodily construction to reach a particular planet. The inhabitants of Earth may be able to reach the moon, but the inhabitants of heaven can reach even the fiery sphere called the sun. What is impossible for man on earth is easy for the demigods in heaven because of their different bodies. Similarly, to see the Supreme Lord, one must have the spiritual eyes or devotional service. The personality of Godhead is unapproachable by those who are habituated to speculation about the absolute truth in terms of experimental scientific thought, without reference to the transcendental vibration. The ascending approach to the absolute truth ends in the realization of impersonal Brahma and the localized Paramatma, but not the Supreme Transcendental Personality. Jnana Yoga Marga Tare Bhaje Jai Sham, ব্রহ্ম আত্মরূপে তারে করে অনুভব। Those who walk the paths of knowledge and yoga worship only him, for it is him only they perceive as the impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. Purport. Those who are fond of mental speculation, jnana marga, or want to meditate in mystic yoga to find the absolute truth, must approach the impersonal effulgence of the Lord and His partial representation respectively. Such persons cannot realize the eternal form of the Lord. So here, the personality of Godhead is being described. That here it has been established that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Actually, there is a conflicting philosophy called Mayavada that does not accept the personality of Godhead. They accept the Vedas, they accept different branches of the Vedas, but they do not accept the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas, that is to become a devotee of the Lord, to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedas are actually describing the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But this Mayavada, these impersonalists, do not understand that. They simply think that the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal. And that's why this conflict is actually very, very dangerous. When somebody did not accept Vedas and remained an atheist, that is better than accepting Vedas but not accepting Krishna. That's why Mayavada is called Vedashraya Nastikavada. Atheism on the basis of Vedas. These Mayavadis accept the Vedas but they do not accept Krishna. So that's why it becomes very, very dangerous. Actually, they are atheists in the disguise of a spiritualist. Apparently, they look like a spiritualist, but they are atheists. They are offenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that conflict has been quite prominent since the appearance of Shankaracharya. We were discussing about Shankaracharya and his teaching the other day, how Shankaracharya actually came and propagated this Mayavada philosophy to accomplish certain missions, to accomplish certain objectives. And what was the mission? Who knows? Why Shankaracharya established Mayavada? Impersonating Srihari. Right. Yeah, to defeat the Buddhists in order to establish the Vedas. So, in order to defeat the Buddhists, he had to present it in such a way that the Buddhists would understand it and accept it. If he came and straightforward gave the theistic concept of Vedas, that Krishna and Vishnu is the Supreme Absolute Truth, then they wouldn't have even bothered to listen to him. They would say, look, I mean, that is the Vedic conclusion. We don't believe that. Our leader, our teacher, Buddha, gave a different teaching. So we do not accept what you are saying. But Shankaracharya actually took the lead from the teachings of Buddha and defeated them. Therefore, Shankaracharya had to establish a philosophy that would be accepted by the Buddhists, that they could not outright reject it. So Shankaracharya pointed out that what Buddha is actually saying is nothing new. It is actually a Vedic concept. But Buddha presented it in the wrong way. The ultimate goal, according to the Buddhists, is nirvana, or merging into nothing, becoming nothing. So Shankaracharya took the lead from that word nirvana as their goal. He said, look, nirvana, you are talking about nirvana as the ultimate goal of your life. But nirvana is actually a Vedic concept. It comes from the Vedas. But nirvana doesn't mean becoming nothing, but nirvana means become everything. So that is how Shankaracharya established the Vedas. He defeated them. They didn't have any argument. Shankaracharya pointed out that how can nothing be the source of everything? Actually, everything is the source of everything. The Supreme Absolute is the source of everything.
Nothing comes out of nothing. You cannot say that this material nature became manifest from nothing. No intelligent man will buy it. But if you say that the material nature has become manifest from the Brahma, the Absolute, then it is acceptable. It is coming from Brahma. And what is Brahma? Brahma is the Absolute. From whom? From what? Everything has become manifest. If somebody says that millions came out of zero, will any intelligent man accept it? So this is how Shankaracharya actually defeated them. Million cannot come out of zero. But if you say that a million came out of infinity, then an intelligent man will accept it. Who is a student of mathematics here? Okay, we have Andre, who is an accountant. Andre, which one is more acceptable? That million came out of zero or million came out of infinity? Yeah. So this is how Shankaracharya established it. That nothing can come out of nothing. Nothing can come out of sunya. Everything comes out of purna. And the purna is Brahma. And then the Buddhist makes an argument, then what about the Vedic concept of gods and demigods and all? So Shankaracharya said, don't worry about that. Actually, ultimately everything is absolute, and absolute is formless. But in order to meditate upon formless, in the beginning is very difficult. It's very difficult to meditate upon a formless in the beginning. Therefore, in the beginning, in the initial stage, in the Vaidhi meditation platform, one can imagine a form. So this is how Shankaracharya presented his Mayavad philosophy. If we go into deeper into that, we can see that how Shankaracharya actually took a Vedic concept but distorted it. That's another, should we get into that? Okay, in brief, let me just present it. The Vedas have one concept called Porinambad. Porinambad means transformation. Vedas actually accept that this material nature is a transformation of Brahma, which is called Porinambad, or theory of transformation. And in simple words, this theory of transformation is like milk is transformed into yogurt. Right? Milk is transformed into yogurt, but when it becomes yogurt, then it is no more milk, although it came out of milk. Or wood is transformed into fire. Water is transformed into cloud. So this is how the transformation theory, the Vedas has the theory of transformation, that is, this material nature is a transformation of Brahma. Another example can be given is a reflection on the water. A tree is standing on the bank of the lake, on the shore of the lake, and then on the lake there is a reflection of the tree. So the reflection is a porinam, a transformation of the actual thing. But Shankaracharya did not present the Porinambad of the Vedas. He presented the Vivartavad. Vivartavad means misconception, illusion. He said that the material nature is an illusory manifestation of Brahma. How? Just as we mistake a rope to be a snake, just as we mistake a mirage to be water, just as we mistake a mother of pearl to be silver. Similarly, this material nature is a mistaken or illusory. Material nature is illusory. Only Brahma is Satya, Brahma is real, but everything, this Jagat is Mithya. That is the, that is Shankaracharya's reversal. But we also, we must understand that he had to say that, he had to do that to defeat the Kuru. Now Ramana, then, as I was discussing the other day, like Ramanujacharya came and defeated Shankaracharya, Vivartavad or Mayavad. How did Ramanujacharya defeat? Ramanujacharya said, fine, there may not be, the snake may not be there on the rope. One may mistake the rope to be a snake, but somewhere the snake must be existing. Otherwise, how can we mistake a rope to be a snake? Where does the concept of snake come? Fine, there may not be water in the mirage, but somewhere the water must be existing. Otherwise, how can we mistake the mirage to be water? So, this material nature may not be real, but somewhere that real reality must be existing. That's where we are mistaking this material nature to be real. Hence, all that is there in the material nature must be existing somewhere else. So the spiritual nature, which is the absolute reality, is not without variety, but full of variety. It's not impersonal. He, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is not impersonal, but he is personal. And all the variety of this material nature is a reflection of the spiritual nature. So this is how Ramanujacharya defeated the Mayavadi. And as I pointed out, like Shankaracharya himself was not a Mayavadi. He himself was not an impersonal. He was a devotee of Vishnu. He was a devotee of Narayana. And that's why he prayed, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Murthamate. He pointed out that you fools, the rascals, just worship Govindam. But the Mayavadis, the hardcore Mayavadis don't accept that also. They say that Shankaracharya actually told the Murthas, the fools, to worship Govindam. He prescribed this worshipping of Govinda for the fool. But this is actually a nonsense theory. Like, if we consider just the next line, then we can see. He is saying, Prapte Shannihite Madane, Nahi Nahi Rakshati Dhunkrim Karane. That all your word jugglery and all your grammatical expertise is not going to help you at the time of death. Therefore, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Murthamate. You fool, worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda. Don't waste your time in just useless word jugglery and grammatizing, grammatical theory. So, here, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it has been pointing out that through Jnana Yoga, through Jnana, he appears to be like Brahma. What is Jnana? The Jnana, in simple words, or knowledge, can be presented as the endeavor to understand the Absolute through material reasoning. Isn't it? The ultimate object of knowledge is the Absolute Truth. A Jnani actually wants to know the Absolute Truth. But how does he want to know? Who knows what is the process of a Jnani? Big question, is this the Absolute Truth? What will be the answer? Is this the Absolute Truth? No. Is this the Absolute Truth? No. So this process is called neti neti, not this, not this. So by this approach of not this, not this, because Absolute is spiritual, so he cannot be perceived through material analysis. So the answer will always remain not this, not this, not this. So ultimately, if the Jnani is very powerful in his endeavor of knowledge, he comes to he actually penetrates through the barrier of material nature. Right? He penetrates through the walls, the coverings of the material nature, and he perceives the spiritual reality. But he has the, he comes to the spiritual nature, but he doesn't have proper vision to see the spiritual reality. So what he sees? He sees a glaring effulgence. His condition is somewhat like a person who has been in darkness for many, many years, and then all of a sudden he is brought out in the midday sun. What will happen to him? He'll become blind. He'll just see a glaring light and he'll become blind. Now, because his eyes are not used to seeing the light. So the jnanis do not have the spiritual vision. So even though they may get out of this material nature, but all they see is a glaring light. And they actually become blind. Generally, that's what happens to the Mayavadis. They see, a specific example of a Mayavadi has been given in Srimad Bhagavatam, that Jyanne Aravindaksha Vimukta Manina Tadjasta Bhavad Abhishuddha Buddhayo Arujya Prichena Param Padam Tato Patanti Adha Anadhita Yushmadam Jyanne Aravindaksha Vimukta Manina. Desiring to become liberated from material bondage, vimukta manina, but neglecting the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not being respectful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, those who aspire to attain liberation, they may be elevated to a, even to the spiritual platform. The spiritual sky, by means of their krichena, austerities and penances. By performing austerities and penances, they may be elevated even to the spiritual sky. But patanti adha, they fall down. Why? Patanti adha anadrita yushmadamsa. Because they have been disrespectful to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless and until one is respectful to Krishna, one cannot enter into the spiritual sky. Just like if someone is not respectful to the king, but instead he is a rebel, he wants to become the king himself, will he be allowed to enter into the palace of the king? The guards will immediately stop him. Not only stop him, this is exactly what happened. Who is guarding the gate of Vaikuntha? Who guards the gate of Vaikuntha? Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is guarding the gate of Vaikuntha. A living entity cannot enter into Vaikuntha without the permission of Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva, he would not allow an unqualified person. So when Lord Shiva sees that such a transgressor, a trespasser, coming in, and he can see, he can know what is his mentality. He can see that this guy actually wants to become Krishna himself. He is a rebel. He wants to sit on Krishna's seat and become the Lord himself. To such an offender, what does Lord Shiva do? He hurls his trident. And being struck by Lord Shiva's trident, he just loses his consciousness and falls. So this is what happens to these Mayavadis. And at the most, they actually fall down and lose their consciousness. And what is unconscious? Stone. See, they become stone. At the most, they become a diamond or a sapphire and give out a little light and think, Aham Brahmasmi. So, but those who are positive Actually, Mayavadis are negative Brahmavadis, but they are positive Brahmavadis. That is, they came up to Brahman realization, but they are not actually offensive to the Lord. So they question, or actually, on the spiritual path, everybody must be guided by a spiritual master who knows the absolute knowledge, who has the absolute knowledge. Without the spiritual master's guidance, one cannot make advancement in spiritual life. Even the Mayavadis have spiritual masters. But what do they have? What kind of, what, how do they approach the spiritual master? Just to have their help only as much as they need. And they think that when they become Brahman realized, when they become Brahma, then there is no need of a spiritual master. Then they kick the spiritual master and say, oh, you can get out now. Now I have become Brahma. Actually, Mayavad philosophy is the highest form of selfishness. They actually, negative selfishness, there is a positive selfishness. The positive selfishness is to recognize the self as a servant of Krishna. But the negative selfishness is to become Krishna. So in the material nature, we have this negative concept of selfishness. That I will become the greatest, everything is for myself. And then ultimately they think that I am everything. And everything is mine. I am the supreme in life. That's the ultimate goal of the Mayavadi. So the negative, the positive Brahmavadi, they are properly directed by the spiritual master. The spiritual master brings them to the Brahman realization through jnana. We must remember that in earlier age, the process of spiritual advancement was gradual. From karma to jnana, and this is how they used to make advancement. And ultimately when they used to attain the yoga perfection, then they would become devotees. But in this age, the devotional service has been awarded to anyone and everyone, irrespective of his qualification or disqualification. But when the Brahmavadis are, say, the positive Brahmavadi is directed by the spiritual master, then he comes to the Brahman realization. And then he sees that he came to a dead end by his external endeavor to attain, to understand the absolute truth. So then he is directed to go inside, to try to understand the absolute truth externally, is the process of jnana, and it leads to Brahman realization. But then, when he realizes that through this effort he came to a dead end, he can't really go beyond Brahma realization. What is beyond Brahma? What is the source of Brahma? He doesn't have any understanding. So then he is guided, after recognizing the futility of the external endeavor to understand the absolute truth, and he is guided to internal endeavor. And what is the internal endeavor? Withdrawing the senses and projecting the consciousness internally is called the process of yoga. Yoga is the process of withdrawing the senses and projecting it internally. Then, in the Ashtanga Yoga, what is the ultimate stage? Right. Samadhi. And in Samadhi, the yogi, the perfected yogi, sees the Lord in the heart as the supersoul, Paramatma. So when he sees the Paramatma, the greatest, the greater than the greatest, the supreme Atma, supreme spirit, super soul, and in the light of the Paramatma, he sees himself as a minute spirit soul. Can you imagine how one at that time perceives himself? Like in the light of the absolute, he sees himself as 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair. Like where is 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair, and where is the supreme absolute? So how does one feel at that time? He automatically becomes humble. He automatically feels like surrendering. So then, through the perfection of yoga, when one surrenders, then begins the devotional service. So through Gyan, one sees the absolute truth as Brahma. Through yoga, one sees the absolute truth as Paramatma. And through bhakti, one sees the absolute truth as very good. Does anybody remember the verse explaining that from Srimad Bhagavatam? 1-11. Mother Vishakapriya. Tattvam. Jajnanam advayam brahmyeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti sabdete. This is the explanation from Srimad Bhagavatam. So is it clear? So now will you practice the process of jnana or yoga or bhakti? You want to remain in the kindergarten school? Or you want to be the graduate school, or you want to be in the university? Where do you want to be? Prakash? Yeah? Very good.
उपासना भेदे जानी ईश्वर महिमा अतएव सूर्य तार दिए तो उपमा.
Thus one may understand the glories of the Lord through different modes of worship, as the example of the sun illustrates.
Shei Narayan Krishner Sarupaya Bhed Aki Vigraha Kintu Akar Bhed.
Narayan and Sri Krishna are the same personality of Godhead, but although they are identical, their bodily features are different. So here, now it is explained that when one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how does one see the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Does everybody see the Supreme Personality of Godhead the same way? No. So what constitutes the difference? What is the difference? That has been explained in the previous verse. Thus, one may understand the glories of the Lord through different modes of worship. As one worships the Lord accordingly, he sees him. As the example of the sun illustrates.
Shri Narayan Krishna,
Narayan and Shri Krishna are the same personality of God. So some see him as Narayan, some see him as Krishna. Now who sees him as Narayan?
Purnachandra?
Very good. Those who worship him in awe and reverence see him as four-armed Narayan of Vaikuntha. And who see him as Krishna? And his demon? Who sees him as Krishna? Mother Guru Seva? Yes. And those who are in spontaneous devotional service. There are two types of devotional service. One is awe and reverence, and the other is loving devotional service. So those who are engaged in loving devotional service, they don't see him as Narayan. Even if they see Narayan, they will worship Narayan. Offer obeisances and please bless me that I can see Krishna. I can meet Krishna. He won't be satisfied seeing Narayana. Because Krishna is manifest through loving devotion. Devotees want to love Krishna. Now love, the matured love is like the love between friends, love between parents and children, and love between lovers and beloved. These are the three forms of loving relationship. Now, one cannot actually develop that loving relationship with Narayan. Therefore, devotees are not satisfied even after seeing Narayan in Vaikuntha. Because awe and reverence actually creates the barrier. But with Krishna, that awe and reverence have been, the barrier of awe and reverence has been removed. Krishna, to the devotee, appears to be like a friend. Krishna is not God to his friend. To them, Krishna is just a friend. Even if Krishna is God, we don't care. That is their attitude. Let him be God, so what? But he is our friend. Similarly, the parents do not accept Krishna as God. They simply think that Krishna is their son. If their attitude is also, if Krishna is God, so what? He is our son. And we must treat him like our son. Like when Jagannath Mishra was chastising Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one day Brahmana came to him and told him that, please don't do that. You do not know who your son is. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Jagannath Mishra said, well, even if he is Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is my son. So I have to teach, I have to treat him, I have to chastise him, otherwise he will be spoiled. So that is the attitude of the parents. It's not that the devotees in Vrindavan do not know Krishna, who Krishna is. That they do not know Krishna or accept Krishna as God is not a negative thing, like in a material nature. It's a positive thing. Their love for Krishna has actually transcended the platform of awe and reverence. Beyond the region of awe and reverence, beyond complete understanding of Krishna as God, is that loving relationship. Like transcending the platform of understanding Krishna as God, they have come to the platform of Vrindavan, where by Krishna's divine arrangement, they have received Krishna as their very dear one, as friend, as son, as lover. Similarly, the gopis, they do not care if Krishna is God. If their attitude is, even Krishna, if Krishna is God, well and good. Even if Krishna was not God, our love for him wouldn't have been any less. That is the attitude. They love Krishna not because Krishna is God, but because Krishna is Krishna, and they cannot help but loving him. That is the attitude of the gopis. And this has been perfectly manifested when Krishna left the Rasa dance. The gopis, in the dead of the night, in the forest of Vrindavan, they started looking for Krishna, crying, "Oh Krishna, where are you?" And then, just to make some fun with them, Krishna took his forearm Narayan form and stood there. And the gopis saw Narayan and offered obeisances. Said, "Oh Narayan, you are so merciful. Please, you fulfill the desire of your worshippers. So we are worshipping you. Please, let us get our Krishna back. Please bring Krishna back to us." So they don't care that Krishna is Narayan. But we can see how Krishna's love for the gopis is. Like when Radharani came, then Krishna could not hide his identity anymore. So his two other arms disappeared and he became Krishna again. So from Krishna cannot hide himself from Srimati Radharani. Because Krishna's love for Radharani is so great that he could not conceal himself in his Narayan form. His Krishna form became manifest. That's the unity of it. So, I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. Does anybody have any question or comment? Yes, Shruti.
My word, if they don't accept beginning. So how do they reconcile the aspect of having self-management?
Well, they don't accept that, the self-manifest or culture. Their thing is, you see, in India people have sentiment for the law and the worship of the law. So Mayavadis are holding big temples and they have deities also in the temples, just to cash on the sentiment of innocent people. So they have, like, as I was saying, that they are, the Mayavadis were actually in control of Tirupati temple, and they said that this was the deity of Lord Shiva. They are worshipping him as Lord Shiva. So their understanding is that ultimately everything is Brahma. But for the time being, when you cannot really understand what Brahma is, you can imagine it. So it can be anything. You can take a stone, you can take a brick, you can take a bamboo stick. So that is there, you know. That everything is Brahma, so you can meditate upon anything. But then from that meditation, Brahma will become manifest. Actually, it's a completely nonsensical theory. Any intelligent man can defeat it. Actually, it's fun to challenge this Mayavadi and smash them. Once I had some encounters with the Mayavadi. The most exciting one I remember was in 79. I was just a new devotee at the time, 2 years in the movement. But I was I went to Himachal Pradesh in the mountains, in the Himalayas, beyond Punjab. There's a place called Mandi. I was in Chandigarh at that time. And Mandi is a beautiful place, high up on the Himalayas, and which is very close to the Kulu and Manali Valley, where they grow a lot of apples. So, anyway, so actually we had, I was invited by one man there, his name is Ramesh Singh. He is one of the richest men of Mandi. And his niece was getting married. So he begged me to come. So I didn't want to go, because I thought I'm a sannyasi, those without the strict about this thing. So I thought, you know, why should as a sannyasi go there? In a wedding. But 2 days before marriage, he sent his brother, whose daughter was getting married, to pick me up. So, and I couldn't refuse. So, and it's a long drive. We actually drove through the practical the whole night. And we came to that place. And he was actually initiated. Ramesh was initiated in a Mayavadi sampradaya. There is a very, very famous Mayavadi. He's blind. He's about 100 years old. Let me see if I remember his name. Gyaneshwarananda or something. Anyway, he's quite a famous Mayavadi actually. So Ramesh was initiated by him. I mean, that kind of initiation doesn't really mean very much. And their group also came, his godbrother Sannyasi, and they also came. But Ramesh actually made arrangements for me to stay in his house, whereas these Sannyasis and others, for them he made some other arrangements. So they became kind of envious to begin with. And we used to take prasad together, like all the prasad for sannyasis were made together. That was only for 3 days or 4 days, so it happened around that time. And I was there, and there was another brahmachari with me called Lakshman. And then this they would, when you sit together for prasad, they would make fun of me. They would pass some, just talk about things. And I used to fume inside. but I used to check myself thinking that I have to be tolerant. And then one evening, I was a little late for prasad, so they all took prasad and they left, and I went there afterwards. And one of the brahmacharis were serving me. One of the brahmacharis was serving me. So this brahmachari also saw this sannyasis, the biggies were making fun of me. So he also tried to pull my leg. And so I just started to speak to him. And he didn't have any argument. And then he must have went back and told them that how he got smashed. And but I was not heavy with him, I was just nice and tried to make him understand. Then one man, he was very nice actually, he was quite youngish, he was a sannyasi. He must have been about in his early 30s, very nice. So one day he came for a walk with me, and he started to, he brought the point that why we have these differences with Mayavadis, and why the Vaishnavas and Mayavadis have this difference. He brought it up. I mean, his attitude was, he was kind of trying to make me understand.